Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The Sonic Truth Dynasty Focus Fantasy Football Podcast, back with another episode. I'm Alan Soslowski of RotoWire.com, along with Theo Greminger. And look who's here, Josh Larkey, in for the Podfather. Major upgrade today, Josh Larkey. Today we are going to talk about rookie landing spots, and we're going to use the betting markets to help guide us, but along with some of the other popular narratives, mock drafts, all that kind of stuff. And we're going to then give you some actionable advice from our perspectives, what the rookie drafts will look like. Because, I mean, Theo, I know you're in like dozens and dozens of leagues. I've pared mine down to about 30 plus. Josh, how many dynasty leagues, and I hope it's not this number where we are, but how many dynasty leagues are you currently in right now?
Eight or nine. It's under 10. So I keep it very, very classy. Yeah.
Yeah, this is why Josh doesn't look like he's about to jump out of a building when the rookie drafts come, because they just start, you know, it's like pick, pick, pick. But, you know, let's talk about some of these spots. We'll start with Josh. So everyone believes Caleb Williams is going to go first pick overall. I have the 1.1 in a lot of drafts, but that means my teams have been bad, you know, in some of those drafts. But what do you think? You know, we always talk about the upside and Caleb is going to be QB5. Josh, what do you think is the outlook if Caleb is just okay? What's really the downside? We never talk about that enough in fantasy football.
Yeah, that I think this is a tough one for me to answer, because the reason that I would take Caleb 101, and some people out there have said, regardless of format, just take Marvin Harrison. Because he seems like the most bust-proof player in the class, and I would agree with that. However, when we just look at the track record of these quarterbacks that get the hype, like Caleb Williams, that have the complete profile where they have elite passing numbers from college, they have some true rushing equity, even when these guys struggle, they don't lose value. And that's what I like about Caleb and why he's my 101, is that even if doomsday hits, you have one, possibly two, possibly 3 years to get out from that train. And people might say, what do you mean you have that many years? Justin Fields, I think that's the perfect example. As of like 6 months ago, you were still getting first round picks for Justin Fields. You can't get that now. So the train left now, but we're also about to see year four of Justin Fields. And Justin Fields was a much worse prospect than Caleb Williams. And he went to a much worse landing spot than Caleb Williams. You might be like, whoa, it's still the Bears. Yeah. But when we think about what the Bears looked like when Justin Fields landed there versus what the Bears are going to look like with Caleb Williams, where the offensive line is better. He has Keenan Allen. He has DJ Moore. He has Cole Kmet. He has Gerald Everett. He has DeAndre Swift catching passes. There's so much there that I really don't think there's the true downside case until we probably get 3 years out. I think you're going to have at least two full seasons where Caleb is being traded for at least a first, if not multiple first round picks.
Josh is just as optimistic as you are, Theo Greminger. So what do you think is, I don't want to call it the bust case, but if things don't go exactly as planned, what does this whole Caleb Williams pick look like, and specifically in fantasy football?
Okay, so we all know, you know, the first overall picks are incredibly insulated, especially those with like sort of the pedigree of Caleb Williams. There's going to be multiple GMs that will say, I think I can make this work. I'd say that the complete bust downside, if you want to compare it to like a current dynasty player's value, the very worst scenario, if he's below mediocre, it's Tua Tagovailoa, quarterback 15-ish, 16, 17. More likely than not, if he fails, he drops somewhere to where the Jordan Love, Trevor Lawrence, Brock Purdy level right now, which is like the level of right at the quarterback one line. We think this can happen. I mean, Josh hit the nail on the head. The rushing upside is going to surprise people. the opportunistic scrambling is going to kind of insulate his fantasy value. This guy, there's no reason for me to think that this guy is going to fail by any means. He was on a fast track forever. One of the best high school leagues in the country, he starts as a freshman in high school. Okay. And to put into perspective how good a high school program he played at and how good a, like, you know, conference that was, that Olu Fashanu is going to be drafted in the top 15 picks. That was his high school teammate. Then he goes to Oklahoma and knocks Spencer Rattler out of the starting quarterback position. Spencer Rattler is going to be a third round NFL pick, goes to USC, wins the Heisman. This guy's not going to miss. This guy is insulated. He's a stud.
All right. Let me push back on you guys a little bit here, Josh. So, I mean, we were saying even more glowing things about Trevor Lawrence, and then it didn't work out for him exactly as expected. Now, you were right. You did say that their value will be maintained for multiple years. Nobody thinks Trevor Lawrence has lit the league on fire as advertised. So is maybe someone like Trevor Lawrence's fantasy production and trade value in the dynasty market a downside comparison we could use?
Sure. So I'm looking, keep trade cut as Trevor Lawrence, QB 12. But if you look at the actual value that they're assigning, it's the same as quarterback 11, Kyler Murray. So if that's the absolute downside, is that after three years, he's still the quarterback 12 in dynasty. That's why I'm just not concerned. Because Trevor Lawrence, for all intents and purposes, has been terrible for fantasy. He's been fine in Superflex, borderline unstartable in one quarterback. So truly busting compared to what we were hoping for, and still awesome value. And that's why, oh man, the downside is that in 3 years I have a top 12 dynasty quarterback. I'm really just not that worried. When I think Caleb's better, and I think Lawrence has really, there's been some unluckiness with year one playing with Urban Meyer, and I think that kind of hurt him and set him back. And then we've seen so many injuries to those Jaguars pass catchers, so many offensive line injuries, and still 3 years in, quarterback 12.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like the 101 is a special insulation. You both said that. So this may not exactly apply, but we see teams moving on much quicker from that first round quarterback. I mean, Kenny Pickett's the obvious answer, right? Two seasons. Zach Wilson was a complete disaster. He still got what? Solid seasons to start. So, I mean, how about Bryce Young, guys? I mean, Bryce Young, if he doesn't do it again this season, I mean, right now you're probably can give a late round first and get Bryce Young or trade him. I think that's about a fair value, right? 1-9, 1-10 in your Superflex draft. And again, we don't think Caleb's going to bust. I mean, we're optimistic, but I think we do need to explore the downside case, especially in a rookie. I mean, what if Keenan Allen falls off? What if DJ Moore has a little bit of a down year? There hasn't really been a successful quarterback in Chicago since Theo Grabinger? Who's the last successful quarterback in Chicago?
For fantasy football purposes, Justin Fields, winning games and having I would say Jay Cutler before that, but Justin Fields was pretty good for our fantasy team.
We have to give Mitch Trubisky credit for his one season.
Good one. Good
Trubisky
one.
Did have one season where the rumors were that he was going to become one of the two or three highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL. I remember that time period. So I think we should at least mention he had that 1 year.
So. I'll give Mitch Trubisky.
Fair. It is Mitch, fair.
Mitch had this one fantasy playoffs where he went like really, really, he put up a couple of really good fantasy scores like right at the end of the season. I know because I got in trouble injury wise and had to stream him, and I ended up winning that title that year. So hat tip to Mitch for your short window of fantasy relevance.
All right, let's take a short break here, right, from our title sponsor. When we come back, guys, I want to just go down the list of the top five teams, look at some of the betting markets, and maybe explore some of the trades, and then ultimately decide what that does to our rookie drafts. I want to see specifically the question I want to answer is, we've been doing this stuff since like January. I mean, probably longer for you guys, but there's been like a big seven, big eight, and we'll see if there's anything that could shake that up. We'll be right back after this.
This episode brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy has been sponsoring Player Profiler and everything we're doing here since 2020. Sign up. Use promo code UNDERWORLD for a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. 100% instant deposit match up to $100. And you're like, oh, well, you know, everyone's on Underdog. Not true. There's plenty of people in this audience that have not yet tried out Underdog, and it's time. They're adding more sports. They're adding more contests. Like when we're heading into NFL draft season, there's the rookies and sophomores game. When you think about way too early fantasy football, that's what Underdog is. When you think about best ball, that's what Underdog is. And if you can pick players at the end of an Underdog fantasy best ball draft that are under rostered, that few people are picking at all, and that guy like Kyren Williams hits, you will likely experience positive returns. All you need is that one guy at the end who no one else is rostering, and the way to find that guy is to listen to us. UnderdogFantasy.com. The promo code is UNDERWORLD. 100% deposit match up to $100 with promo code UNDERWORLD. Underdog makes everything we do possible.
I forgot how much I love playing Underdog. In years past, I would already be like 40 drafts deep. This year, I've done a few. And I'll get into a little bit more. Larky, have you gotten into Underdog yet? How often are you doing these? Or are you just waiting a little bit at this point until after the NFL draft and we see some landing spots?
Yeah, this is my heaviest volume of the year is pre-draft. I think I have the biggest advantage just understanding a lot of my rookie process at this point is involving draft capital. A lot of people are like, I really want to know how good the player is pre-draft capital. And then I'm like, okay, what's the most important variable in your model? And they're like, well, by like 6X, it's draft capital. And I'm like, oh, that's very interesting. So I'm very, very acutely aware of projected draft capital for these guys. And I think that gives me a big advantage is understanding how to handle the rookies. So I think I've done, I'm probably in the three figures for total drafts at this point. Yeah.
Theo, do you like what Josh has said, right? I mean, there is definitely an advantage to I remember Josh Jacobs was his rookie year was like a second round pick or first round pick. I was getting him around like 9, then 5 before the actual NFL draft occurs. But are there a little bit maybe sharper players in the drafts before the draft, or you think that you like to play now, or is it a little bit that you like to play after the NFL draft?
I like to play all year long, but okay. I do really enjoy this time of year. And I think that you kind of hit the nail on the head and Josh as well is if you're in an early pre NFL draft dynasty startup, or if you're in a pre NFL draft best ball draft, the best values are always rookies without landing spots every single year. Now you're going to get caught, you know, with a couple of bad picks every now and then when a guy slides down and like, it certainly doesn't get drafted, but that's always the case. Those guys are always the ones you want to dive into. That's where you get the best return on investment.
All right. We're back to our rookie landing spots right now. Lark, you have the window open. What are the current odds for the second overall pick with our two quarterbacks with Drake May and with Jaden Daniels as of right now?
All right, so Jaden Daniels to go to Washington is minus 275. For people that don't want to do the math, that's going to be about a 70% implied chance that Jaden Daniels goes there. He's plus 225 to go to the Patriots.
Can I cut you off for a second here? It's not that don't want to do the math. It's that, self-included, don't know how to do the math. I don't know.
Alan, you played a minus 275.
I know what it means, but I didn't know how to do the. Yeah. Can you teach us right now before you go forward? How do you do the translation to percentage?
Sure. So the plus odds one is easier. So plus 200 for everyone. This is great radio is doing math on air. So
I think it is. This is relevant to the.
What I would do here is you take the number one and you put it on top of that number. So we'd go one divided by the 200. Okay. And then you add another 100 to the 200. So it's basically like 1/300 and it becomes 1/3.
Oh, okay.
And then everyone knows look 30. At like the 1/3. So you kind of just add one number to it. So like plus 300 is really like 1/4.
Got it.
3 + 1.
Did you know that, Theo?
I zoned out. I was in the chat answering.
Okay. Jamie's training. All right, Josh, we'll stop here. If Theo's bored, the audience is bored. But I like this.
Maybe I'll put it on Twitter later is how to do the calculations because I think the biggest thing for people that are new to betting is just understanding the percentage. Mm-hmm. We're much better at percentages. If I tell you Jaden Daniels is minus 275, most people out there are like, okay, so he's the favorite. But they don't really know like minus 150, minus 275. What does that mean? And the percentages are super important because I really don't think I'd lay minus 275 there. I mean, I think he goes to Washington, but then you hear about all these rumors of like, oh, Washington might actually take Jaden Daniels. Maybe Washington trades back or might take JJ McCarthy, or maybe they trade back to three or four. Minus 275 is essentially saying if you're betting this, it needs to happen about 70% of the time or more of these types of bets long-term just for you to break even. So really, if you're betting this, you're hoping Jaden Daniels is like the lock to go to Washington with like a 90% chance. That's when you get really comfortable. And I just don't know if I'm there yet.
Theo, so really this is what it comes down to with this question is which quarterback, because I don't think JJ McCarthy is the likely guy going it too. I mean, again, obviously anything can happen, but Jaden Daniels, Drake May, which one do you think is better for the Washington pass catchers? You got Terry McLaurin there. You got Jahan Dotson. Sneakily, they signed Zach Ertz. If he's not dusted, he's always a reliable pass catcher. So which quarterback do you want to see go there and why?
I mean, certainly if it was a Terry McLaurin question, I think I'm leaning with Drake May. Because I think Jaden Daniels is going to be exceptional as a runner. And I always worry about the passing touchdown ceiling going down a little bit because of his threat around the goal line, his threat in the red zone as a scrambler. I don't think either one is bad, though. I think both of them are an upgrade to like what we've seen. I don't know if there's any Washington pass catcher there now that I'm like, I need to go out and get in Dynasty. I've seen the arguments to go trade for Terry McLaurin because he's going to get a quarterback upgrade. This could be his year, but we sort of waited for that for years with McLaurin. He's sort of been a kind of a purgatory level, like low end wide receiver two type. I can find Terry McLaurin production a lot of places. In terms of who I think would score more fantasy points in that offense, though, it's definitely Jaden Daniels. I like the fit with Cliff Kingsbury. So if you're going to take the argument that like the pie grows larger because the quarterback, you know, increases more scoring opportunities, probably Jaden Daniels.
All right. I see you nodding along, Josh Larkey. Jaden Daniels would be the more appealing fantasy option in our rookie drafts in Washington over Drake May?
Yeah, I think Theo said it well. We for fantasy in a vacuum, we want Jaden Daniels. If we want to expand to the team environment, we want Drake May simply because Jaden Daniels is going to have to be a significantly better and more efficient passer than Drake May to help out those Washington pass catchers the same way, simply because he's going to run 3 to 7 times per game more than Drake May. So that's just fewer pass attempts out there.
All right. So Theo, you're in a lot of super flex leagues here, right? So Jaden Daniels, good pairing with Cliff Kingsbury. You like the situation. He's going to be handed the keys to the car, you know, right away. Is there going to be a choice in rookie drafts between quarterbacks, which are almost impossible to buy, one with any insulation through trade market? You have a chance. You're on the clock at 102. For all our 102 drafters out there, Marvin Harrison in a good landing spot or Jaden Daniels, and why are you picking that way?
I'm Marvin Harrison at the 102 all day long over any of these quarterbacks just because I think he's a truly remarkably special player. I think you can make an argument that Malik Nabers should go ahead of Jaden Daniels. I think those two wide receivers are just so good. I think that really the top four is going to be, for me, Harrison Jr., Nabers, Caleb Williams at the top, and then Jaden Daniels at the 104. If I'm in horrible quarterback shape, though, Alan, then I'll consider like moving around, but it's really hard for me to envision taking any of those guys ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. I just think he's, when we look at wide receivers who can average like 20 plus points per game, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. could have multiple seasons like that. I don't want to give that up. I'll take my chances, dumpster diving at quarterback and trying to get a couple of Baker Mayfield types.
I mean, Josh, you've been in QB purgatory in one of your 9-10 leagues, whatever it was there. It's so hard to buy a quarterback, even to buy like a Jared Goff or Brock Purdy. You have to give a quarterback back plus something else. So you're sitting there on the clock at 102. Mm-hmm. What's the case here? I mean, like a quarterback is right there for you with top 12 upside.
Yeah, my strategy is a little different from Theo. I usually just take the quarterback, and it's because of the scarcity where there's at maximum 32 fantasy viable quarterbacks in some form, because you can't have more than one quarterback on a team. You can have more than one wide receiver that's fantasy relevant on a team. So I'm always going to take the quarterback. They're just insulated a little bit more with their value. The highest possible end dynasty assets in Superflex will be quarterback. It's pretty tough. Like, Justin Jefferson's been historic with the way he started his career. Same with Jamar Chase. These guys simply do not have the value that like a Josh Allen, a Patrick Mahomes has in Superflex. So for that reason, I would go Jaden Daniels and then just kind of say, hey, if he's Deshaun Watson, if he's Lamar Jackson, whatever, you're within 2-3 years, you have this asset that a receiver just can't quite touch. So I'll usually just go with that because it's much easier to trade away a quarterback. If you decide that you don't want him, it's much easier. It can actually be hard sometimes to trade away a receiver because then people are like, what do you want in return? You're like, well, I want a quarterback. And they're like, gotcha. So I'll usually just defer to quarterback because it's a little safer. But if we could say like in a perfect scenario, if someone's just so hungry to take Harrison at 2 or Daniels at 2, if you can identify that person, trade down. So what I would say is everyone says trade down. The way that I have actually successfully traded down there, because it doesn't, sometimes you just have to make the pick. The way that I do it is I just sit there. It's going to be uncomfortable. You put Jaden Daniels or Marvin Harrison, whoever you like, you put them in your queue at 102 and you just sit there. And I assure you that when it's been 2-3 hours, people think you are waiting, not because you want to trade down or you're unsure what to do, but because there's too many good options and you're getting too many good trade offers. They don't even know if you want to trade down or not. People just start to assume the longer you wait that you are now mulling more and more trade offers. So it's almost like 2 hours in, then suddenly the pick spikes in value because people go, oh, why? He's had all offseason. He should know who he likes. Why is he waiting? He must have good offers. I need to make the good offer. So I usually say like between hour 2 to hour 4, you're going to get the best trade offers.
Gosh, Josh, being in your leagues is just like, that's like torture. It's like these long 8-hour clocks when you can just draft Marvin Harrison Jr. or Jaden Daniels and people are pulling their hair out being like, I want to pick so bad. I'm willing to trade Josh something just to get this draft moving.
Right. I'm willing to tank my whole draft just to move the damn clock along. But Josh makes an interesting point, though, because people like actually physically pushing the draft button. If you draft Marvin Harrison, then for some reason, he still has a lot of trade value, but it's like a little bit of shine off. Someone wants to actually trade up and push that button. Now, we also, you guys bring up an interesting point. Theo, you've heard it all the time. You said it a minute ago. Just trade down. You know, in these drafts, when you have a bunch of them going on, and plus it's easier said than done because the average dynasty player, Theo, is a lot less casual than they used to be.
I mean, yes and no. I think that this year, when it comes to the top, when we get past pick 8 in Superflex drafts, then I think there's a little bit more of a, it's sort of flat. There's no reason for me to trade around. But I think this year it's not going to be difficult to get those trade offers while you're OTC. It would have to be the most casual type league for people not to be actively looking to try to move for these players that are already so insulated in dynasty value. Like, we haven't ever seen a top 3 wide receivers, steamed up this high. And we haven't seen a 4 quarterbacks steamed up this high in quite some time. So I don't think it's going to be a problem, Alan.
Yeah, I just saw a mock draft come out with Peter Schrager from the NFL Network, and he had said after a week of talking to GMs and coaches, here's his mock draft. And, you know, Schrager, you can say what you want, but he always had, you know, he's connected, he talks to people, and it doesn't mean that his mock draft is going to be the guide, the roadmap. It's hard to do this, but he has Drake May. He has those two picks, Caleb, Jaden Daniels, 1-2, has Drake May going to New England at 3. They are going to stay and take their guy there. That doesn't seem like that great of an appealing pick. Josh, if you Drake May is in New England, especially for year one, that seems like it could be a little dicey for fantasy football.
Yeah, I think New England's the worst landing spot. I mean, we could talk a lot about quarterback value insulation. I think whoever goes to New England, we have to pretty strongly consider the downside case. Not that this guy is going to have zero value, but just, all right, let's start to wrestle with what the value is actually going to be if we have a relatively underwhelming first couple seasons. There's just no receivers there. The offensive line is good. It's not even, I wouldn't even say it looks like it's going to project to be truly great. And every single year, the Patriots, just the way that their style, the way they play, seems to be a little slow, a little boring. Not very.
But it's
good for
a
fantasy.
It's a new regime, though.
It's a new regime. Maybe that changes, but generally, until I see it, then I won't believe it. And ultimately, that new regime is still Patriots guys. Like Gerard Mayo, still he's still a Patriots guy, and that's a little bit concerning to me in terms of fantasy. So I'd say if Drake May went 103 and Daniels went 2, I would definitely take Caleb. I would definitely take Daniels. I would lean Harrison and Neighbors going ahead of May as well. And if McCarthy, there's a trade up or something and he goes to like the Vikings, I would even consider McCarthy ahead of May at that point too, purely because I think you might have to wait at least 2 years to get serious fantasy points from Drake May.
All right. He did it. Theo, Josh did a nice job of outlining the downside, and I'll let you respond. But I wanted you to try to make the upside case for Drake May in New England.
So the upside case is, again, I agree with Josh that like the Jared Mayo played for Bill Belichick. Jared Mayo coached under Bill Belichick. Therefore, Jared Mayo having some Bill Belichick-like tendencies is probably a good bet. But when it comes
down to
it,
Did you see this comment? Josh doesn't believe in boobs until they're in his hands. That's a good one. I would say that is pretty good. Sorry, Theo. I usually don't interrupt for a comment, but that was a good one.
It was an interesting one. Shout out to the fantasy plumber.
That's a good like life motto. That's like a good metaphor.
So you know, I don't either. I don't believe I'm ever going to get them until they're actually in my hands. I believe, you know, in theory they exist, but I don't think I'm actually going to get them until, you know, I've been given consent on tape.
Okay, so back to the making a bull argument. Okay, so the Alex Van Pelt, Ben McAdoo offense also doesn't make people like, you know, over the top excited. It's not some, you know, inspired hire like Ryan Grubb was or something like that. But I'll say that the chance of Drake May being used in a Josh Allen light role in New England with a lack of playmakers might increase his opportunities as a designed runner. Because Drake May has that a little bit, where he's a big, strong quarterback who can run a little bit. Now, it's going to take an offensive coordinator to say that's the way we're using Drake May. Him landing in New England, he might be more likely to have that sort of opportunity. So that's kind of my bull argument, is either one of these guys are going to be pushed down a little bit because of their quality, the offensive weapons around them, and the reputation of the offense. But I do think that the chance of becoming like a one-man gang, a Josh Allen like weapon light, is there for these guys, at least early on in their career. So I think that kind of keeps their production up slightly, a little bit higher. I don't think the New England landing spot is quite as much of like a death sentence as some people are saying.
And yeah, I want to,
which landing spot is worse then? Because
New England's worse, but
I mean, like, is there one that's worse than New England? So like we talk about how New England's a bad one. I think that's the worst one, unless you think there's a place that's worse if Drake May or someone like one of the high-end quarterbacks ends up there.
Right, but I think what he's saying, and I don't want to speak for you, Theo, is that you agree it's the worst, but it's not as bad as everyone thinks it's going to be. It's a little bit of a higher floor. Do I have that right?
I'll throw out, I think Denver could be a really rough one if they sell out and go get a young quarterback. Denver, have Cortland. Yeah, like I think Denver could be really, really bad next year with one of these guys.
Hey Josh, also you made a good downside case for Drake May, but let's remember New England, you know, they may have a perceived lack of playmakers and pass catchers, but they also have the second pick in the second round. And I think everyone agrees that there's a lot of upside with wide receivers. And if they take one of those guys in the second round, might that change your mind? They go Drake May at 3 and just say Ladd McConkey or Jalen Polk or whoever your favorite early second round receivers, Troy Franklin.
Yeah, that would make me more optimistic. Right now, Troy Franklin and Ladd McConkey are both plus odds. It means that they have a less than 50% chance to go round one. The betting markets are pretty set that there's like a 30 to 40% chance those guys sneak into round one. Obviously, we hope they sneak in round one. The back end of round one is Bills, Chiefs, a lot of heavy hitters there. But it seems like right now, one or both of those guys are early round two. And then that would open the door for the Patriots to double tap offense and go quarterback, receiver. I would start to like that more, But still, that's now needing two things to go right, where you need the Patriots to take the quarterback, and then you also need the Patriots to take the receiver. There's no odds listed as to what position the Patriots will take with their first pick. Almost every team has that listed on DraftKings. The Patriots don't. And what that signals to me, when you actually look at like the odds of different quarterbacks to go to the Patriots, they're all a little bit longer than expected. I still think there's some type of slight chance the Patriots trade back. The Commanders are set. The Commanders are taking Jaden Daniels. That is pretty much set in stone, is what it seems like. And if they don't take Daniels, then they take Drake May. The Patriots, it seems like there's like this 1 in 3, 1 in 4 chance that they're actually trading back, either to get QB4 or to just say, you know what, our roster's not ready for a quarterback. We're trading fully back.
I'll add that I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that they don't take Marvin Harrison Jr. at the 103 and just say, we'll figure quarterback out another time. We're going to build our offense that completely lacks weapons around this wide receiver that is truly special. Maybe they get in the mix, like Alan said, for like a Nix or a Penix, who both of those guys, they're over under to be selected is like right at the 1-2 line.
Yeah, they're 32.5 is their number for both of those guys.
I would not be shocked by them rolling into the season with Jacoby Brissett and him targeting Marvin Harrison Jr. 150 times.
Yeah, I mean, Jacoby Brissett, guys, he's a top 40 quarterback in the NFL still, right? Like, he's one of the players that, as a Jets fan, I would have like done anything to have him as a backup last year. He's someone that goes in and he's a professional caretaker, can move the offense. So at least that's similar to Minnesota, who, again, say what you will about Sam Darnold, but at least he's, at very minimum, he's like a poor man's Andy Dalton, someone that can at least run the offense. All right, down to pick 4, guys. This is where I think the draft is really going to get interesting, because I think we expect quarterbacks to go 1, 2, 3 in some order. In Traeger's mock, he has the Giants, Josh Larkey, trading up from 6 to 4 to go take J.J. McCarthy. What would that do to J.J. McCarthy's value, knowing that Daniel Jones is being paid still like an elite-level starting quarterback, at least for 2024?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about McCarthy in that situation. I think I'd worry about Daniel Jones. You don't take a quarterback at pick 4 just to have him sit behind Daniel Jones and really try to figure out how do we keep Jones on the roster. I think that would show that they're just eating some money, and that Daniel Jones is not their starting quarterback. He's coming off the ACL tear. So at that point, I would just be pretty excited about J.J. McCarthy saying, hey, he got top 4 draft capital. I know that the weapons aren't great there right now, but there's still a chance J.J. McCarthy is like the 10th, 12th pick in the draft. I think he probably goes early, but there's still that downside case if he's a mid-first-round pick. So if he goes to the Giants, I like that. Right now, the Giants have super interesting odds in the betting markets. They basically have a 2-to-1 shot at going receiver, but they have about a 40% chance implied of going quarterback. And you might say, like, huh, so if they're at pick 6, 40% chance of quarterback, there's 4 good ones and then 2 that are like back first rounders. That kind of tells me there's like a 40% chance of them basically trading up. So that gets me excited. So I think Schrager's really leaning into that. And I'd say it's ultimately a good thing. We just want J.J. McCarthy to get into that top 4.
His number right now, guys, is 5.5 for his under over pick. And Theo, if McCarthy, you know the dynasty psychology better than anybody. If McCarthy is picked at pick 4 by the Giants, Josh made a good case for the strong draft capital and what it means. But with Daniel Jones there, could that knock him down a spot, say, out of like that one in our rookie drafts, our Superflex dynasty drafts, from like behind whoever RB1 ends up being?
I think he would still probably end up being the 108. I don't put as too much weight into Daniel Jones's presence that you do, Alan. It's something. But I'll say, yeah, if Jonathan Brooks is selected by Dallas at the end of the second round, then there's going to be certain leagues where you see J.J. McCarthy at the 109 in that scenario. I do think that 80% of the leagues, he'll still be the 108. But the range of outcomes where if J.J. McCarthy lands in like Minnesota in like a trade up scenario, he's going to be a lot more appealing to fantasy managers than if the Giants trade up in terms of like where he's going to go in super flex drafts. But you bring up Daniel Jones. I don't think there's a bigger like 2024 range of outcomes for maybe any player in the entire draft than Daniel Jones. If Daniel Jones survives one of those or one of the three quarterbacks that could annihilate him in dynasty, then he's suddenly playing with the best wide receiver he's ever played in potentially in Malik Nabers. So it's like a massive, massive swing for Daniel Jones. He'd end up having some value to the dynasty managers who are like stuck with him right now because, you know, with his, you know, rushing ability, now he'd have a weapon. We've seen him finish quarterback eight. I think he'd be like, you know, mid QB2 level next year if he just survives those quarterback landing spots.
Yeah, Josh. I mean, I was in a recent startup and Daniel Jones went after some of the backups. I mean, like the high end backups, like Justin Fields went ahead because I guess the psychology of the startup market is that Fields is eventually going to take over the job. Now, you can argue whether you think that is true or not, but Daniel Jones, man, I mean, he has like been discarded. And as of today, he's a starting quarterback in the NFL and he has mobility.
Yeah, I think he's probably a dynasty buy right now just because of that upside case. The downside case is obvious, but where you're getting him, like you said, he's starting to get valued like some of these backup quarterbacks. There's a pretty good chance Justin Fields is never fantasy relevant again for more outside of like a 1 or 2 week fill in due to an injury potentially. Right. And Daniel Jones, ultimately, the guy has gotten paid. I kind of disagree with it. I think a lot of people disagree with it. Justin Fields is almost certainly never going to get paid the way Daniel Jones did. And I think we have to respect that at least one team out there thought Daniel Jones was worth a significant amount of money. I assume if every other team in the NFL was like Daniel Jones is a backup, the Giants wouldn't have given him a contract that's giving him $30, $40 million a year. They would have been like, hey, everyone else out there wants to give you $10 million a year as a backup. You should be pumped. We're going to give you $15 million. So I think the fact that they gave him that much implies at one point there was that market for Daniel Jones. So I think the upside is that there's a career resurrection with a better receiving core, or he goes somewhere else and a team just kind of helps play out the remainder of his contract when the Giants eat some dead money and suddenly he's super cheap. And again, a starting quarterback with mobility, like Theo said.
Yeah, Theo, Josh called Daniel Jones a buy. Would you give, if you have picked 2.01 and you said, earlier that, would you give something like that? Like in a Superflex league, would you give like your very early second rounder for Daniel Jones right now in a Superflex? We just said how hard it is to buy quarterbacks.
Probably not. I think, you know, any team I have with Daniel Jones, I'll take the 201 for him right now. And the 201 could end up being a quarterback.
Bo Nix,
like those guys are going to be in the wheelhouse. Daniel Jones seems like a declining asset with like, he could get blown up. And I do think that if the Giants do strike out on quarterback in this draft class, they might be a team that would be inclined to draft like a Spencer Rattler on late on day two or something like that. I should say if they strike out for like the big four. I don't think that they're done in this draft class. Like, I think they're a team they pick, you know, in the second round, they could trade up to the early second in that Will Levis zone if one of those guys falls, or again, be aggressive for a guy like Rattler who could, you know, be probably drafted at the beginning of round three. Maybe they sneak into round two and just take him.
All right. In our scenario so far, we had all our quarterbacks, regardless of who trades up or trades down, go 1, 2, 3, 4. Los Angeles Chargers are on the clock, Josh Larkey. Using our betting odds, DraftKings Sportsbook or wherever you get your betting odds from, that we've seen the Chargers move more towards a run-focused offense here. Are they going to take a pass catcher in your judgment, or do they take the best lineman, Joe Alt, sitting there at pick 5?
So this is actually my favorite point in the show. Because I think the Chargers, when you look at the betting markets, are the single most interesting team in the draft. I will explain why. If you look at the positionally, what position are they likely to take? They are favored to go O-line by quite a bit. The implied odds of them taking receiver are like 35%. It's almost.
And what about
like,
O-line? What's the implied out of the O-line?
O-line's about 55%.
Okay.
So it's like they are probably taking O-line. So you're like, okay, they're going to take Joe Alt at 5. But not so fast. Because then you look at the odds of players to go top 5. Malik Nabers is significantly more likely to go top five. Malik Nabers has about a 40% chance to go top five based on the implied odds. Joe Alt's implied odds to go top five are under 20%. It is almost certain Joe Alt will not be a top five pick. So you say, how can the Chargers be favored to go O-line, but Joe Alt is outside the top five? And it's almost assumed at this point they will be trading down. And that's what gets so exciting is we go, okay, is it the Giants? Is it going to be the Vikings? Does J.J. McCarthy slip a little bit? And then the Raiders or the Broncos start to enter. And I think the pick five is so, so fascinating for that reason, where it's almost like the betting markets have basically told us, hey, these two things don't line up for pick five. And it's because it seems like I would say they are the most likely team to trade down.
And yeah. And I'll add, Alan, that it's, I agree. I think that the Chargers really would like to trade down. I think that that's sort of the intention, is to get more high level picks and sort of
how
build
far down
team.
How far.
So I think we don't really know. And I'll say that there's a couple of things that Harbaugh lets on, like he's this guy who's kind of like this hokey dude, but Harbaugh's done this many times over. Like, he knows how to manipulate a market. Every chance he gets, he's praising J.J. McCarthy. Every chance he gets, he's been trying to steam this guy up. He's also, they're in a sort of position where Tennessee might look at them as a team that they need to jump to get Joe Alt, Josh. Like, that's the only team I could see kind of trading into that five spot and drafting Alt there. And then they also are not only a landing spot for a team trying to get a quarterback, but there's teams that we're not even thinking of right now that want to get a Malik Nabers, want to get a Roma Dunze. And there's teams that are going to come out of the woodwork and attempt to trade up in that spot. So I agree with you guys that I think that the Chargers are a team that is most likely trying to trade down. How far down? I think probably they're not going to trade with Denver in the division. They're not going to give Denver an opportunity to get their franchise quarterback. I don't see that happening. I think most likely it's probably a Minnesota landing spot.
One second, the quarterbacks are gone at this point, right? In this scenario, the Chargers are at five, and okay, presumably so all.
In that scenario, then I think the most likely trade partner is the New York Jets. And I think the New York Jets trading up from 10 to five. There's some smoke screens that the Jets would consider trading down. But I think if Marvin Harrison Jr. is sitting there at the at the five spot, the Jets are going to look at him as a guy that's going to put them over the top for the division.
The other one I'd say is it would be a little bit against their nature. I still think the Colts are secretly in play to move up for a receiver like that. When you look at their receiver room, when you look at what they're trying to create there, I think that that's actually possible in terms of like these secret teams, is the Colts trading up for Harrison or the Seahawks even trading up for tackle.
With Schrager's mock, guys, and I find it fascinating. And again, I'm just a fan of Schrager. That's why I keep referencing it. I know there's some other great mockers out there. In this scenario, he does have the Chargers sticking and picking Marvin Harrison. He has Roma Dunze going to the Cardinals at pick six. Remember, they traded down here with the New York Giants. He has Joe Alt going number seven to the Titans. Dallas Turner, edge rusher, to pick eight to Atlanta. And this is the part where reason I want to underline. Josh said he has the Colts trading up for Malik Nabers with Chicago. Very interesting there. So let's explore this scenario.
Interesting.
Yeah, so let's explore this scenario for a minute. Colts and Chicago Bears make a trade. Nabers is now on the Colts. We already know. We all like Michael Pittman, right? We love the value. We love the production. So this is our first scenario where we like a player, but now the situation has a little bit of cold water. And I'll start with you, Theo, this time right here. Would you still have the same amount of enthusiasm in this scenario where Harrison went to the Chargers and the Colts traded up for Nabers at pick nine? How would you parse that out in our rookie drafts?
I think you could make an argument for a Dunze at the 102, but I probably would still go with Nabers. And I would say that the shifting of the tides would not
one
be
QB.
Good.
One QB.
In one QB leagues. Okay. The shifting of the tides would not be good for Michael Pittman in that scenario.
I think Theo, I just ruined his day, Josh Larkey.
Michael Pittman Jr. value would not be good.
I hate this
right
idea.
There. Yeah.
It's not just Michael Pittman. It's Malik Nabers too.
Yeah.
Well, you're telling me that we have Anthony Richardson, a top three most prolific rushing quarterback, Jonathan Taylor, the type of running back you want to give top three carries per game to in the NFL. Oh, and now we have two receivers that we're just trying to will into 150 targets, and it's awful. I think that would be truly the worst situation. I didn't even know that Schrager had the Colts trading up. I hadn't seen them trading up in too many mocks yet. I just knew that.
Well, that's why they were extremely
desperate. I knew they were desperate for a receiver. So yeah. I think that's interesting that there's actually mocks out there that fully have them doing that, since I thought that was a little bit more of an outside chance. If it's in Schrager's mock, he must have heard at least something that was not just they are desperate about getting a receiver, but they might even be willing to go up to get that receiver. But yeah, I think that's just doomsday for fantasy. I mean, we would love that for Anthony Richardson, but I think that's about it.
I mean, I'll say this. Malik Nabers is not the kind of player that necessarily needs to have 155 targets with his explosiveness. Like, we've seen guys, with that sort of big playability and explosiveness, 135 targets for him might be good enough, Josh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'd rather just bank an extra 20 targets.
There you go. But I would not be scared off of Nabers any landing spot. Like, this sort of talent, I don't want to get like landing spot focused. Like,
I think Nabers is more landing spot proof than Harrison. Mm. The reason I say that is Harrison's going to be much more out wide operating. Nabers is probably going to be operating 50-50 out wide in the slot. Quarterback play is going to matter a little bit less if he's getting some of those shorter targets. So I will say I am less landing spot worried about Nabers just because of the likely role.
Right. But Theo, we're going to have to really rethink the dynasty rankings over at Player Profiler. If Rome Odunze lands in, according to this mock, right, in Arizona, pick six, has the draft capital over Nabers, and Nabers has the worst situation, you're going to have to, will you flop those guys? Will Rome Odunze be the more appealing option in your rookie drafts?
I think they'd be very, very, very close. And I think at the end of the
No. We know they're close. Which one are you ranking ahead and why?
I might have to go with Odunze in that one, begrudgingly. But I'll say in terms of the overall dynasty rankings, like at Player Profiler, like for our, not our rookie rankings, our dynasty rankings, I think the more likely scenario would be Rome Odunze gets pushed into the top nine in dynasty wide receivers, but I don't think that means Malik Nabers somehow torpedoes. I think they'd be like neck and neck in terms of overall dynasty value. Whereas now, like, I have Malik Nabers somewhere around wide receiver 8 in dynasty, Odunze probably around wide receiver 12, wide receiver 13, like right in that range.
Right. Yeah. No, this is not about Malik Nabers tanking. This is about everyone that's watching this right now is in multiple dynasty drafts, dynasty leagues, and they have their rookie drafts coming. And a lot of people are sitting there and, you know, I have pick 4, I have pick 3, I have pick 5, and they're going to be faced with this choice. They want to hear from you guys, the guys that study this stuff, the experts, who they should take and why. Then they're going to make their own decision. So it sounds like I ruined your day with that comment, Theo, but Josh, you agree here that, I mean, you're on the clock. You're going to have to really, this is why draft capital is important.
Yeah.
And landing spot specifically.
Yeah. I think I'd have Odunze and Nabers back to back, and I'd have Odunze ahead. If he went to the Cardinals ahead of Nabers and Nabers went to the Colts, purely because the Colts just extended Pittman. So there's at least one guy that's heavily competing for who's the top option in targets. I think Nabers would overtake him, but there's no guarantee there. But there is the guarantee that Anthony Richardson's got at least 3 more years there with very, very low pass attempts.
All right.
I hate that thought experiment, but you're right. We need to do it. And right. I would go Odunze over Nabers. I'd have them back to back.
Right. I'm the king of cold water, and I got another one for you. Everyone loves Brian Thomas Jr., right? LSU wide receiver, good measurables. We all believe he's going to be a first round pick, but in Schrager's mock, Theo, he's got him going to Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Well, and I know you've been aggressive ranking Brian Thomas. Did you have him as high as wide receiver 4 in this rookie class?
Yes, and that would not be a good outcome. We've never seen a wide receiver targeted more than 117 times ever in an Arthur Smith offense. And then you add in the fact that he's got like overlapping skill sets with George Pickens. A lot of the stuff you can try to do with George Pickens, like it would be no good at all. This would be a cap target ceiling for Brian Thomas. He would also have to overtake another guy who's flashed as an alpha in George Pickens. They're both like big outside wide receivers. It would not be good. It would not be great. Not be great.
Would that, wouldn't that just be awesome for Pat Freiermuth? Because Brian Thomas, when you look at his targets per route run in college, very underwhelming. Yeah, it's kind of like Pickens, where targets per route run, very underwhelming. But the production's still there due to big plays. So you basically have two big outside receiver types. Neither is a full target hog. They're both getting there on efficiency. Who's going to get targeted? Pat Freiermuth could end up leading that team in targets.
The purpose of this podcast today, I mean, we've been talking about rookies and the upside and what we think is going to happen. And look, we're a very short while from the draft. I think it's about time to kind of look the other, you know, look at other scenarios. And that's what we're doing here with this Landing Spots podcast. You know, everybody assumes, guys, and I think rightfully so, that Minnesota was going to be the one to trade up for that pick four, pick three, and get a quarterback. If they stick and pick, again, using Schrager's mock as kind of just a guide, not a Bible, they're taking a defensive player, non-skill player at pick 11. And then Schrager has them taking Bo Nix at pick 23. Where would we have to maybe slot him in our dynasty super flex drafts, Theo?
He'd be a first rounder, but I would say that he's not going to be high. Like, they're more like the 110.
Okay.
The 110 in super flex. I think that at the end of the day,
that's not bad.
Yeah,
that's ahead of Xavier Worthy. Those are ahead of first-round wide receivers.
Yeah, I think that you'd have to because of the quality of the weapons. It's sort of like I've said that I like Bo Nix, but I think Bo Nix could be like a Derek Carr type. So it's kind of like peak Derek Carr being put in a great situation with an excellent offensive line and excellent weapons. You're talking about a couple of seasons of quarterback like 16, quarterback 17, quarterback 15 maybe. I think that would be kind of in the range of outcomes. Like Bo Nix, he's very accurate, and he's quarterbacked a ton of games. He's got a ton of experience and a ton of accuracy. Not the biggest arm. I think he's also an underrated runner. Like, he's not bad, but he's also a guy that I think fantasy ceiling is certainly lower than the other guys. I don't mind Bo Nix though. Like, and me saying that he'll be in the side of the first round of a super flex draft, that's not like a knock on him. It's just saying that I'm drafting a guy that I think is more of a QB2 than a guy that I think would have like a, you know, mid QB1 type ceiling.
Yeah, Josh, I mean, nobody that's done any of these, we've seen so much rookie draft mock content out there, which is so fun to do. And it's so fun to consume, right? To be in these. I've never seen Bo Nix go in the first round. Do you agree if he's picked in the first round, the late first round, that Kenny Pickett area where he doesn't have that like protection for multiple years? He's in Denver, good setup. Where do you think that people going into rookie drafts right now should value him?
Yeah, I think he should be a late first. If he sneaks into the first round, then I think he should become a late first. When you look at the betting markets, both Bo Nix and Michael Penix are like just under a 50% chance to go round one. They're both like supposed to go back. Like, they're both supposed to go pretty much like the very beginning of round two is where they're being kind of placed into the betting markets. But I don't think they actually go at the full end of round one. You might say like, okay, I see that their betting odds are set at 32.5. And it's like, yeah, that's because it's whether or not they're a round one pick. They're not going to go at the end of the first round to the Bills, the Chiefs, the Ravens. It's more so, does the team try to trade up for them? Do they go at like the pick 23 slot? I think the 32.5 is basically saying like
first round.
Are they
a
first rounder? Are they a second rounder? And I think right now, if either of those guys gets first round draft capital, we should find a way to sneak them into the first round. Just because these guys are decent prospects. Penix never really ran in college, and then suddenly he has the 4.5 40 time. And then Bo Nix quietly had 500 rushing yards in 2022 with Oregon. And remember that college rushing is removing yardage when they get sacked. So it's like extremely impressive, nice, actually, to have 500 rushing yards in college. So I think Bo Nix is like a very, very underrated runner potentially. And then Penix, maybe he does run at the NFL level. We often see the guys that have speed kind of get thrust into more of a rushing focused role once they hit the NFL, where NFL teams are saying, hey, we're actually going to utilize your skill set, rather than college, where it can be a little bit more, you are in our system, we are inflexible, this is how you're doing things because you're a college athlete. So I think either goes round one. They should in the NFL draft. They should now go round one in our super flex drafts.
Bo Nix had a 14 rushing touchdown season as well. So
it's pretty good.
Yeah, he's got it a little bit. Got it a little bit.
Yeah. Theo, the big surprise of Schrager's mock. And again, this is not about Schrager's mock, but he just has a little bit something different out there. And he claims in his mock that he's talked to GMs and coaches. And we know people lie too. So I think he's able to parse that out. He had, and then the whole point of our podcast today, our exercise, is that if this happens, then how do we rejigger our thinking a little bit? In this particular scenario, he has Jalen Polk out of Washington, the wide receiver going to the Kansas City Chiefs at pick 32. Okay. That's a pretty good landing spot. And it's an unexpected piece of draft capital. I know it's like hard to like come up with an answer on the spot, but where do you think the dynasty market will value Jalen Polk at pick 32 in the first round in our rookie drafts?
I think that it would be a kind of a very quick adjustment. Jalen Polk's also been like, anytime that there's like sort of an expert NFL mock draft, I've seen Jalen Polk get kind of pushed into like the middle of the second round. So there's a lot of people kind of pushing him in the second round. This is the first time we've seen him kind of as a first rounder, and then he gets the sort of the nuts landing spot. Jalen Polk to Kansas City, we'd have to get excited about it and have to sort of adjust on the fly, Alan. I think he would end up being in single QB leagues. I think he would end up being a first round
single QB leagues. Come on, Josh, you agree that we shouldn't even speak that language. It should be super flex.
Super flex. I think he would move up right into like the 202,
okay,
the 201 level. I don't think he would have enough juice to get inside the first round. Like right now you're seeing Ladd McConkey being drafted right around the 201 in a lot of these super flex mock drafts. I would say Polk probably with the Chiefs landing spot would have a little less juice than that. People still have to kind of adjust here, Alan. And that would be a big leap for some. So I'd say 203 in like an FFPC league, like pretty sharp, super flex, mock rookie draft.
Josh, every year we see a wide receiver with first round draft capital fall to the second round in our rookie drafts. It happened with Brandon Ayuk. I mean, you can go down the list, right? It happens with a lot of guys, and that it's very rare to be able to get a first round draft capital wide receiver in round two. What do you think that if Polk does get this shocking draft capital in a favorable landing spot, what does that do to the draft markets in our rookie drafts?
Yeah, I think I'd probably end up ranking him as a late first round pick, where Rashee Rice is a good example of a guy who had a good, not great profile, just like Polk. And we saw what he could do in that offense. I think that would mean that the Chiefs are pretty pessimistic about Rashee Rice's long-term outlook with his legal issues. I think Rashee Rice is fine. I don't think Polk goes round one. All the betting markets think Jalen Polk is not a first rounder. I think Schrager is kind of on an island here. If you believe Schrager, you can make quite a bit of money right now. The implied chances of Polk being just a first round pick are like 1 in 7, 1 in 8 on DraftKings and FanDuel right now. It's probably not going to happen.
I mean, that's sub out
pick. I think he's probably doing that just to get some clicks and build off of the Rashee Rice legal issues. I don't think it happens. Polk doesn't profile like a first rounder. And there's just, I mean, come on, guys. We got Ladd McConkey. We've got Troy Franklin. We've got A.D. Mitchell. We've got Brian Thomas. We've got Keon Coleman. These are all guys significantly more likely to go in the first round than Jalen Polk. It's just so crowded. I don't see Polk leapfrogging.
Take his name out of it, though, guys. Just take his name out of it. It's like it could be anybody in there. It could be an unexpected player to go to the Chiefs. And again, according to this mock and all those players you name, he has Ladd McConkey in the first round as well. He has him going to San Francisco at 31. He doesn't have the other players, Keon Coleman and Troy Franklin. So we're just talking about like the unexpected guy that gets into round one. That could happen. I think you'd have to almost handicap that closer to 50%.
I'll say that the most interesting over-under that I saw is Xavier Legette is at 44 at Circa. So Xavier Legette is a guy that like some dynasty people just can't stand because of the late breakout, the age of the prospect. But like that's the sort of guy that I think could get drafted a little bit higher than some people are really willing to admit. I would think that he would be like a dark horse candidate to go at like 33 to New England, maybe to Carolina inside the, you know, those 30s, or dare I say it, to 32 overall to Kansas City.
All right, guys, we're gonna start wrapping it up here. We're gonna use the betting markets a little bit and just talk about a few of the draft props that caught our eye. You know, you could say whether you like it, whether you're playing it or not. And obviously, we'll tie that right back into our landing spot. We'll each give a couple of those. So, Josh, I know you've been, you know, you're passionate about sports betting, and the draft props market can be a profitable one. So is there anything out there right now that you're going to be taking? Put a little sprinkle, as I like to say, that's popped out to you on any of the sports books.
Yeah, there's a few bets I like. So I have a question for you guys. Are there running backs going in the first round this year?
Of the real NFL draft, probably I would bet almost
no. So it's minus 1600 for no running backs go in the first round. I have bet it. The odds are actually even like higher on some other books. DraftKings minus 1600. That implies a 94% chance there's no running backs in the first round. I think it's like a 98% chance. How teams have just seen year after year that it's probably not a good idea to do this. And usually when it happens, it's because there's been so much smoke of this running back going round one. Right now, like we're not even guaranteed a running back in round two.
Right.
What the heck are we doing with round one? So I think that's like a fairly risk-free investment. It sounds gross to lay minus 1600, but like Trey Benson's not going in the first round. Like it's Jonathan Brooks is not going in the first round.
We,
so I think
we used to call it the airplane test. We used to call it the airplane test, Josh, right? Like, but the problem with that is like you would never get on an airplane, right? That has a 98% chance to survive, right? If two of every 100 airplanes were falling out of the sky, you would never travel by air.
Yeah, but I mean at that point.
So it's not airplane test. It's a good bet, but risk free. Yeah, it doesn't pass the airplane test.
I can give some plus odds bets. Apparently the listeners do not like a minus 1600 swinging big there. One that I do like, some other ones, Carolina first pick wide receiver. They pick at the start of round two. Right. We already know there's a plethora of good options. It's minus 130 on DraftKings, but you can get that plus 115 on FanDuel. That's like a nearly a 10 percentage points difference in the odds actually. So I'd take that one on FanDuel. Blake Corum is 2-1 to go to the Chargers on DraftKings, but he's 3-1 to go to the Chargers on FanDuel. So I would take that on FanDuel. When you look at Blake Corum as well, I have two Blake Corum bets. I also bet him to go to the Giants. And you might be like, what? You bet on him to go to the Chargers and the Giants? So on DraftKings, after the Chargers, the Giants are the next most likely team to take him at 3-1. So DraftKings is established. They think Blake Corum 3-1 to go to the Giants. FanDuel, he is 16-1 currently to go to the Giants. That is one of the wildest odds discrepancies I've ever seen. So I simply bet a little sprinkle of Corum at 16-1 to go to the Giants, since I don't know what's going on there with the discrepancy. Another fun one. We all like Xavier Worthy. He's really fun. And I like him at 7.5-1 plus 750 to go to the Chiefs on FanDuel. The odds are much worse on DraftKings. 7.5-1. When you already know that Xavier Worthy is probably going to be a first-round pick, probably later on in the first round, maybe he's their Tyreek Hill-type replacement. I think that's a very, very fun bet to make where you get a pretty good odds discrepancy there. So that's just a few that I have put my money on. And then one more, Brock Bowers. So Brock Bowers, he's plus 140 on DraftKings to go to the Jets. He's plus 185 on FanDuel, plus 200 on Bet365. I think he probably goes to the Jets. I think it's probably close to 50-50, but you can get that at basically 2-1 odds or a 33-35% implied chance on FanDuel and Bet365 for Bowers to be a Jet. Whereas DraftKings, he's much closer to a 50-50 call there. So I have also bet on Bowers to go to the Jets.
I hope Larky hits some of these so he doesn't go broke. Theo, tell us how to make some money.
Josh Larkey starting out the betting advice with a minus 1600 bet.
He did caveat it that, you know, it's a nutty, you know, he recognized, but yeah, you're right. Minus 1600. It's like, will there be oxygen in the air tomorrow at minus 10,000? I'll take it.
There you go. There you go. I love Buffalo Bills to select a wide receiver with their first pick, and it's minus 235. So it's chalky, but it's chalky for a reason. I don't think that they're going to gamble on, hey, let's pass on wide receiver in the first round and then figure it out the rest of the draft, because of a lot of these over-unders for like the wide receivers we like are all inside of the of pick 50 and up. So I think Buffalo is more likely to trade up and get a wide receiver or simply stay put at 28 overall. Xavier Worthy, his over-under is at 28.5. So I think there's a chance that they draft him. I also really like both Adonai Mitchell and Brian Thomas's over-under. It's 17.5 for a reason. Like, I think NFL teams are going to draft these big three wide receivers, and once they're gone, those two super athletic outside threat like alphas that did really well at the combine are going to be very much in play. I think Brian Thomas Jr. could be the pick at 11 overall. I think Brian Thomas Jr. could also be a New Orleans Saint at 14. We both have said that the Colts are going to try to trade up. If they don't trade up, that's a classic Chris Ballard type pick to get that uber athletic wide receiver. So I love the Brian Thomas inside of pick 17. And I'll say Adonai Mitchell as well, just because the Adonai Mitchell one doesn't make sense. For him to have his over-under at 17.5, if you believe the mock drafts that we were looking at, like the complete last month, then saying it would be over 17.5 would be like free money. All these people projecting Adonai Mitchell to go like 10 picks later, the fact that the books are putting it there speaks volumes. I think he actually goes inside of the first 17 picks. And then I like a couple of these running back props. I'm a sucker for it. But Braylon Allen being inside of round three at 87.5, again, the betting markets are telling us something there. I'm going to take Braylon Allen inside of that third round. I think 87.5 is a really nice number for him. And I like the Jonathan Brooks one as well. Jonathan Brooks one is 56.5. Let me take Jonathan Brooks getting its second round draft capital.
I'll add on to the Bills one. The Bills traded up for Kincaid last year. So I think that adds fuel to them going receiver. Is when people ask, why did you trade up for Kincaid? They basically said, we thought he was the best pass catching weapon on the board. And it shows like they just want pass catchers. They wanted receiver and they didn't get it last year. Now there's no Diggs. I think that should be closer to like -400 for the Bills to go receiver round one.
Yeah, they have Traeger's mock. He has the Bills sticking at 28 and still getting AD Mitchell. And he had, you guys mentioned Xavier Worthy. They have in this mock specifically, they have him at 24 to Dallas. Is that a trade, right? Does Dallas have, I thought they had 21. Oh, no, that's the Miami. No, right.
Dallas is 24.
Right. And Miami's 21. I'll just add one because you guys outlined some of the best ones, I think. Was I mentioned to you this offline that I like Blake Corum to be the first running back drafted at +450. Josh gave me some good pushback advice saying it was what, 350 to be. What was that bet that you told me that might be a little bit better value than the +350?
The one I took was +310 for Corum just to go to the Chargers. I think if he's getting really good draft capital, it's through the Chargers connection with Jim Harbaugh.
All right, guys. Great job by both Josh and Theo today. Before we go, real quick, Josh, tell everyone the most important thing you're working on. And of course, they can always find all your work over at Jay Larkey Tweets. Follow him as I do. Most important thing, you got 15 seconds to let everyone know what to look for.
I'm working on some team and player projections. I will put some of that on my Twitter, and I'm doing some consulting stuff in the background right now within the industry. So can't talk about that yet. Hopefully can talk about that soon.
Josh, always one of the most fun follows. I like when you mix it up with people, Josh, and you fight with people on Twitter. That's like my favorite thing to do. I like that better than any projections and stuff. You're a good troll, a counter troll, as I call it. You know, you troll the trolls. So I think that's a good service that you do for everybody. Theo Greminger, you just put out a VOG Fantasy, just dropped the player profiler rookie guide. Why don't you let everybody know how they can get that? Because I think that is your most prominent piece of work this week.
Yeah, so you can get that right at playerprofiler.com. You can buy the Dynasty Deluxe package and get access to the rookie guide. You can buy the rookie guide by itself for $20, or you can subscribe to the all-in package, and the code Theo gets you $20 off right now. So if you want to subscribe, get $20 off with that. That's a great way to get everything we offer at Player Profiler, but get my rankings, Cody Carpentier's rankings, Jax Falcone and Chalk of the Undroppables rankings, Matty Kiwum's rankings, and John Lobb's rookies rankings, as well as player write-ups from writers like Alan Soslowski and Josh Larkey and the Podfather himself. It's loaded. And then Dynasty Life this week, I'm dropping one with Ryan McDowell, dropping one with Scott Barrett. I'm trying to bring on some big Dynasty guests because we're almost a week away from the NFL draft, fellas. We got to get serious with it.
All right, guys, you can follow me at Alan Zaslowski, and every Friday I do a podcast on the RotoWire podcast, YouTube, and podcast network. We're having John Laub on the pod this week. Thanks again for tuning in, and let us know in the comments your favorite draft prop bet and also the landing spot that you believe would be the biggest disaster.
Hey, I want to thank you for being part of this broadcast. If you have any thoughts on it, leave a comment. If you enjoyed it, make sure you leave a like. And if you want to see more shows on the Player Profiler channel, subscribe to it. That's how we know you want more.